Bana sorun. Has attacked, not attacked, but he has captured
Ani Buddha,
the grandson of Lord Krishna, and Krishna has come with so many Akshahinis and Banasura to come to Banasura's city of Sunitapur, and Banasura, they immediately, the fighters of Krishna, they began breaking down the city. Banasura became furious. He sent out his own Akshahinis, including, and Lord Shiva also fought on his side with Nandi and all of Lord Shiva's followers. And Krishna's army with Balaram, Pradyumna, Samba, they were defeating the army of Banasura. And Banasura became furious and he attacked and he was going to be destroyed. And then Banasura is, when all else fails, your mother comes to your rescue. So Banasura's mom came out, dressed, as they say, in the four directions only, has caused Krishna to turn his head to the side out of embarrassment. Banasura escaped back into his city, and then Lord Shiva, seeing Banasura in so much trouble, used his ultimate weapon, which is the fire at the time, the fever at the time of destruction of the body. And that's called the Shiva Jara. So after Lord Shiva's followers have been driven away, the Shiva Jara, who had three heads and 3 feet, pressed forward to attack Lord Krishna. As the Shiva Jara approached, he seemed to burn everything in the 10 directions. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes the Shiva Jara: 3 legs, 3 heads, 6 arms, 9 eyes. Showering ashes, he resembled Yamaraj at the time of universal annihilation, because after all the fever that that finally finishes the material body is fully destructive. It wins and it's like Yamaraj. So how did Krishna respond to this? Because Lord Shiva had sent this weapon to respond to fight specifically Lord Krishna, who was about to kill Banasura, and Lord Shiva had vowed to protect Banasura city. So seeing this personified weapon approach, Lord Narayan released his own personified fever weapon, the Vishnudwara. The Shiva Jara and the Vishnudwara thus battled one another. They battled each other. So there's no comments on this. So who's going to win? Cold or heat?
Cold.
Yes, cold seems to win, unfortunately. The
Shiva Jara,
overwhelmed by the strength of the Vishnudwara, cried out in pain. But finding no refuge, the frightened Shiva Jara approached Lord Krishna, the master of the senses, hoping to attain his shelter. So he was in so much distress that that distress forced him to take shelter of Krishna. So that distress, of course, was the best thing that could happen to the Shiva Jara. So he took shelter of Krishna and he offers 3 or 4 prayers, simple prayers, but these prayers, they please Krishna. And there's a benediction attached to those who hear these prayers. So we'll listen carefully to that.
So
he took shelter of Krishna, the Shiva Jara, and he began to praise the Lord. The Shiva Jara began to praise the Lord. So he understood that he called for Lord Shiva to help him, and Lord Shiva was unable to help him, so he took direct shelter of Krishna, even though Lord Shiva was his master. So he said, I'll read the 3 prayers first, 3 or 4 prayers, 1, 2, 3, and then his request. The 3 prayers and then his request. He said, I bowed down, I'll ask what is the essence of each of the three prayers after we read that. I bowed down to you of unlimited potencies, the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul of all beings. You possess pure and complete consciousness and are the cause of cosmic creation, maintenance, and dissolution. Perfectly peaceful, you are the absolute truth to whom the Vedas indirectly refer. Second one. Time, fate, karma, the jiva and his propensities, the subtle material elements, the material body, the life air, false ego, the various senses, and the totality of these is reflected in the living being's subtle body. All these constitute your material illusory energy, maya, an endless cycle like that of a seed and plant. I take shelter of you, the negation of this maya. Philosophical, but having to do with the practical material existence. With various intentions, you perform pastimes to maintain the demigods, the saintly persons, and the codes of religion for this world. By these pastimes, you also kill those who stray from the right path and live by violence. Indeed, you present incarnation, your present incarnation is meant to relieve the earth's burden. So really, in that last verse, he's criticizing Vanasura too. Now his request. So those three verses. I'm tortured by the fierce power of your terrible fever weapon, which is cold yet burning. How could something be cold yet burning? If you ever took bathed in Gomukh, you would know how cold it can be burning, because the water there is so cold that you can't tell whether it's cold or hot, practically speaking. All you can tell is that you have to get out of the water very quickly. It's so cold, your body just burns from the cold. All embodied souls must suffer as long as they remain bound to material ambitions and thus averse to serving your lotus feet, your feet. So that's the end of his prayers. So there's actually, that we can say that's a fourth prayer as well. So let's understand what he's saying here. Here's the first one. So I'll ask you, what is the essence of this one? The Sivadvara says, I bow down to you of unlimited potencies, the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul of all being. You possess pure and complete consciousness and are the cause of the cosmic creation, maintenance, and dissolution. Perfectly peaceful, you are the absolute truth to whom the Vedas indirectly refer. So what is this verse about? What is this verse about?
Identifying the position of Krishna.
Okay, but what aspect? Because they all identify the position of Krishna in the verse. Controlling aspect, controlling specifically. I'll read it again. I bow down to you of unlimited potencies, because he has unlimited potencies, he's the unlimited Lord, controller. The Supreme Lord, the Super Soul of all beings. You possess pure and complete consciousness and are the cause of the cosmic creation, maintenance, and dissolution. So he's the cause of all causes. He has unlimited potencies. And he causes not only creation as Lord Brahma. I think Vishwanath says that because Gobadaksha Vishnu is the source of Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma is the source of Lord Shiva, so therefore he is the Krishna is the source of the maintenance, creation, and destruction. Perfectly peaceful, you're the absolute truth to whom the Vedas indirectly refer. So he has unlimited potencies, and he's the cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction. But that's not his unlimited potencies. That's just some of his specific potencies of creation, maintenance, and destruction. But he has unlimited potencies in addition to this. But yet, the Vedas indirectly describe him, and it is you, O Lord, who has completely pure and complete consciousness. So the fact that Krishna creates, maintains, and destroys the material world, it doesn't make his consciousness, contaminate his consciousness at all, because it's completely pure. And also, it's completely, he's completely conscious. He's conscious of everything, in addition to the creation, maintenance, and destruction, but also of the creation, maintenance, and destruction. But he's the cause of the whole entirety of the cosmos. So we can't imagine, obviously, what it would be like to have the potency to cause the entire cosmos. I mean, we can imagine what it would be like to have the potency to lift a little table, or to the potency to drive a car, or to play a drum, or we can imagine what it's like to have the potency to buy a little piece of land, or we can imagine what it's like, but we can't imagine what it's like to be able to move the earth, to create a planet, to destroy the earth completely. We can imagine what it's like to take a small piece of paper or something and destroy it. And then even to destroy something of this world, our consciousness becomes affected. But Krishna is completely conscious of everything. He has unlimited potencies, and he's the cause of not only creation, but maintenance and destruction. It takes so much energy to maintain something. And despite all three modes of material nature being brought into play, Krishna is beyond the modes, and he's perfectly peaceful. So just imagine how much anxiety we'd be in if we had to create all of material existence and then maintain it. Just maintaining anything is so much anxiety, and then destroy it. Well, Krishna is completely peaceful. He's the absolute truth, and the Vedas indirectly speak of him. So we'll talk about each of the two verses. So this is sort of a big picture of who Krishna is. And the Shivadvara, who is the worshipper, who is a servant of Lord Shiva, the weapon, a potency of Lord Shiva, he's taking direct shelter of Krishna, and he's stating that Krishna is beyond Lord Shiva, and because Lord Shiva comes from Brahma, and Brahma comes from Vishnu, from Govardhaksha Vishnu. So he's taking direct, acknowledging who Krishna is. Lord Shiva sometimes becomes angry in ignorance. Lord Brahma sometimes, due to the mode of passion that he has to play with. But Krishna is beyond, and he takes full shelter of Krishna. So this is giving a big picture of Krishna. So what does this first of all? So he's the Krishna who is the complete controller of all the material existence. Now the second verse. Let's hear this. Time, fate, daivam, fate. Karma. So it's interesting how fate is differentiated from karma. What do you think about that, Jyotish Shiromani? Fate and karma are different.
You could say that karma is directly attributable to our actions, and fate has other elements.
Yeah, what's the other element?
Daiva.
It's Daiva.
Yeah.
It's got the hand of the Supreme Lord. Because, for instance, if we have complete, if everything that we've ever done, there is a reaction to, and we've been conditioned, we're conditioned souls for hundreds and thousands and millions and billions of births. So how much karma do we have in the big bag of our karma? There's a lot. You would say it's too much karma we have. So which one do we get today, and which one do we get tomorrow? Which part of it? There's unlimited karma in this huge bag. So that's up to the super soul. So even to get a human life, it's not mechanical, it's up to the ultimately it's up to the super soul. So whatever happens is ultimately Deva. He's the permitter. So there's different factors of action, of course. So anyway, it's interesting. But anyway, time, fate, karma, and the jiva and his propensities. And we tend to identify with our propensities. We tend to identify with our karma. We tend to identify with our fate. The subtle material elements, the material body, the life air, false ego. We say, I don't have any energy today. I don't have it in the life air. But we identify with it completely. False ego, the various senses, and the totality of these is reflected in the living being's subtle body. Interesting that these are all within the subtle body. We were mentioning this before. Usually we think of that we have a direct relationship with the outside world, but all the objects of the senses, according to the Vedic calculation, they're in the subtle body. We don't have an objective relationship, although everyone thinks that we objectively can judge everything. But if we notice that when you get 2 people or 10 people or 100 people who objectively tell you exactly what happened, none of them will say the same thing. So if it was truly objective, then everyone would say the same thing. But because everyone is just interacting with their subtle bodies, basically. So this is a famous point, isn't it? That if you ask if there's an auto accident, and if you ask 10 people what happened, you get a minimum of 10, 12, 15 different, sure, completely convinced reports that are different about what had happened. So all this, the totality of all these reflected in the living being's subtle body. So all those are in the bubble that we walk around in all day long. And all these these are the constituents, the Sivadvara says, of your material illusory energy, Maya. So all these are either upadan karan or the nimittika karan of Krishna's Maya Shakti, as described in the 3rd canto of the Bhagavatam. So first, the grand creation is described, and then specifically how it relates to us. So everything outside is Krishna's energy, and here everything inside is Krishna's energy, illusory energy. And these constitute an endless cycle, like that of the seed and plant. I take shelter of you, the negation of Maya. So here he's taking shelter of the Lord. The Vedas describe the Supreme Lord as the creator, but indirectly, and here he is the source and the substance of the material energy, and which is endless in the cycle of creation, maintenance, destruction. And then, so into this huge creation of Krishna, then the 3rd verse. With various intentions, you perform pastimes to maintain the demigods, the saintly persons, and the codes of religion for this world. Yada yada hidamasya bhani bhavati bharata. By these pastimes, you also kill those who stray from the right path and live by violence, like this Banasura. Indeed, your present incarnation is meant to relieve the earth's burden. So Krishna is the great one who causes everything, but yet he comes into the material world for specific purposes. He doesn't actually ever touch the material world, but that's the term we use. He descends into the material world, but he but really only stays in the spiritual world, in the spiritual realm. And he comes to relieve the earth's burden. So now, what is the Shivadvara going to do about this? So then he says, I am tortured. He explaining first after these three points about Krishna, that Krishna is the cause of the cosmic manifestation, cause of the living entity in his bubble-like situation, illusion situation of Maya, and he comes to remove the burden of the earth, etc. And now he says, I am tortured by the fierce power of your terrible fever weapon, which is cold, yet burning. All embodied souls must suffer as long as they remain bound to material ambitions and thus averse to serving your feet. So he's setting up he's taking shelter, but he says everyone who has material ambitions is automatically averse to serving your lotus feet. If anyone has a purpose, a separatist purpose in the material world, that will automatically make him averse to Krishna, opposed to Krishna even. And that is the job of the false ego, to entangle us in selfish attempts for pleasure. All embodied souls must suffer as long as they remain bound to material ambition and thus averse to serving your feet. So bound to false ego. Anything to do with false ego. It's completely artificial. Now listen to the purport. So the first verse, what was the, that's the 25th verse. Anyone remember what it was? Something about it? Yeah. Yes.
Lord is the cause of all causes.
Yeah.
And comes from him.
Yeah. I don't remember anything else.
Pure consciousness, even the clearest manifestation.
Yeah. That's amazing, isn't it? I'm entangled. He does everything through his separated energies. Sambhavam yatmama. He never actually touches the material energy. And we do something when this, as long as there's any material ambition, either positive or negative, icha dvesha, simultaneo, then we actually touch the material energy and become entangled. Bhunte prakriti jnaniya. We touch the material energy and become bound by it, stick to it. But his pure consciousness completely attached. Do you remember anything else?
Controller.
Yes. Maintenance, dissolver, creator, super soul, pure and complete consciousness. He's conscious of everything.
That is what Vyasa said in the first sloka of Satyam Param Dhimahi. Accept the truth.
You know, the absolute truth to whom the Vedas indirectly refer. And yet, he's praying to this person. And when Brahma will pray also like that, and then he's praying to a little boy who's standing there with a lump of food in his left hand, and Indra prays to Krishna, who's herding the cows. And here the weapon of Lord Shiva is praying to the mighty warrior Krishna, who's just defeated him and his master. So here's the purport. Previously, the Shivadvara felt himself to be unlimitedly powerful, because who stops the fever of death in this world When the fever of death comes, it wins. But, and therefore he attempted to burn Sri Krishna. But now he himself has been burned, and understanding that Sri Krishna is the Supreme Lord, he humbly approaches to bow down and offer praise to the Absolute Truth. So I find it interesting that he just attacked Krishna, trying to kill Krishna, and he lost, and he's about to die. He himself is getting burned, and this is the cause of him taking shelter of Krishna. So if someone is trying to kill you, and then you're defeating him, and then as his last alternative, he comes and says, sorry about that, you know, you're so powerful, and I take shelter of you, please protect me. So, what would my reaction be, you know, after what you've done to me, you know, and now you're asking me for protection, at least you have to suffer some, or something like that. But Krishna is going to react completely differently than that, because he has no false ego, he has no attachment, his consciousness is clean and pure, etc. So he doesn't react like that at all. So he himself has been burned, and understanding that Sri Krishna is the Supreme Lord, he humbly approaches to bow down and offer praise to the Absolute Truth, because Krishna is unlimitedly powerful, which is what that verse says, but he's also unlimitedly merciful. According to the Acharyas, the word Savatmanam indicates that Lord Sri Krishna is the Supersoul, the giver of consciousness to all living beings. Krishna confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita, Mata Smitir Gyanam Aponam Cha. For me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. In his commentary, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti emphasizes that the Shivadwara has realized in many ways Lord Krishna's supremacy over his own master, Lord Shiva. Thus, the Shivadwara addresses Krishna as Ananta Shakti, possessor of unlimited potency, as Paresha, the supreme controller, and as Sarvatma, the supersoul of all beings, even of Lord Shiva. The word Kevalam Gyapti Matram indicates that Lord Krishna possesses pure omniscience. According to our limited understanding, we act in this world, but Lord Krishna, with his unlimited understanding, according to our limited understanding, we act in this world. But Lord Krishna, with his unlimited understanding, performs infinite works of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. As Srila Jiva Goswami points out, even the functions of the gross elements, such as air, depend on him. The Taittiriya Upanishad confirms this. Bishamad vata pavata te. Out of fear of him, the wind blows. Thus Lord Sri Krishna is the ultimate object of worship for all living beings. That's the first verse, and that's a comment on that. And second verse, about time, fate, karma, the jiva and his propensities, the subtle material elements, the material body, the life airs, false ego, the various senses, totality of these reflected in the living being's subtle body. All these constitute your material illusory energy, maya, an endless cycle, like that of a seed in a plant that takes shelter of you, the negation of this maya. Let's see what the purport is. The word bija roha pravaha is explained as follows. The conditioned soul accepts a material body with which he attempts to enjoy the material world. That body is the seed, the bij, of future material existence, because when a person acts with that body, he creates further reactions, karma, which grow into an obligation to accept another material body. In other words, the material life is a chain of actions and reactions. The simple decision to surrender to the Supreme Lord releases the conditioned soul from this useless repetition of material growth and reactions. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the word tan nishedam papadyei indicate that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is nishedhavadibhutam, the limit of negation. In other words, after illusion is negated, the absolute truth remains. The process of education may be succinctly described as a way of eradicating ignorance through the attainment of knowledge, through inductive, deductive, and intuitive means. Oh, there's a whole. Now, these are the methods. Intuitive also, it's also accepted as a process that comes from the supersoul. And there's a particular type of consciousness, a level of consciousness that places us in touch with the more intuitive faculties, getting to gain inspiration from the supersoul. Through inductive, deductive, and intuitive means, we attempt to refute the spacious, the illusory, and the imperfect, and imperfect, and elevate ourselves to the platform of full knowledge. Ultimately, when all illusion is negated, that which remains firmly in place is the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the previous text, the Shivajaya described the Supreme Lord as Savatmanam Kevalam Gyapti Matram, pure concentrated spiritual consciousness. Now the Shivajaya concludes his philosophical description of the Lord by saying in this text that the various aspects of material existence are also potencies of the Supreme Lord. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti mentions that the Supreme Lord's own body and senses, as applied here, implied here by the word tannishedam, are none different from the Lord's pure spiritual existence. So everything is spiritual in him. The Lord's body and senses are not external to him, nor do they cover him, but rather the Lord is identical with his spiritual form and senses. The full absolute truth, unlimited and fascinating diversity, is Lord Sri Krishna. Then the third verse. With various intentions, you perform pastimes to maintain the demigods, the saintly persons, and the codes of religion for this world. By these pastimes, you also kill those who stray from the right path and live by violence. Indeed, you present your present incarnation as meant to relieve the earth's burden. As Lord Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, this is the purport. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvaishastina priya ye vijanti tumam bhaktya mayateteshu shapyaham. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion as a friend is in me, and I am also a friend to him. The demigods and sages, Devan Sadhun, are dedicated to executing the will of the Supreme Lord. The demigods act as cosmic administrators, and the sages, by their teachings and their good example, illumine the path of self-realization and holiness. But those who transgress the natural law, the law of God, and live by committing violence against others are vanquished by the Supreme Lord in his various pastime incarnations. As the Lord states in the Bhagavad Gita, Yayatamam Prapadyante Tamstatavabhajamyaham, he is impartial, but he responds appropriately to the actions of all living beings. And then the fourth verse in his prayers, and then we'll hear how Krishna responds to these prayers of the Shivadwara. I am tortured by the fierce power of your terrible fever weapon, which is cold yet burning. All embodied souls must suffer as long as they remain bound to material ambitions and thus averse to serving your lotus feet. In the previous verse, the Shivadwara stated that those who live by violence will suffer similar violence at the hands of the Lord. But here he further states that those who do not surrender to the Supreme Lord are especially liable to punishment. Although the Shivajaya himself had acted violently up until now, since he had surrendered to the Lord and rectified himself, he hopes to receive the Lord's mercy. In other words, he has now become the Lord's devotee. And then Krishna responds, all three-headed one, I am pleased with you. May your fear of my fever weapon be dispelled immediately. As soon as there is surrender, Krishna gives shelter. And may whoever remembers our conversation here have no reason to fear you. So that's one reason why we went over it. Even though it's all philosophy and no fun so late at night. But still, there's a benediction attached to it. You have no reason to fear you. We'll have no reason, those who remember this conversation. So I'll read the purport and then I'll conclude with a comment by Vishwanath. Here the Lord accepts the Shivadrara as his devotee and gives him his first order, that he should never frighten by hot fever those who faithfully hear this pastime of the Lord's. So he could have said, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, he could have said, don't give anyone who remembers this conversation any fever, this kind of fever. But he didn't say that. He said that they not fear you. So even in the, so even though one who remembers this conversation may get the fever that causes the destruction of the body, but there won't be the fear that a non-devotee will have when it's time to leave this world. So interesting, because Krishna, of course, he does the things the way he wants to do them. So that was all. That's how Krishna responded to these prayers. He just said, "I'm pleased with you," and he saved him, and he gave him some service to do and an order. And then the Maheshwara Dwara bowed down to the infallible Lord and went away. So he had his little exchange with Krishna on the middle of the battlefield. He had attacked Krishna with his full potency, like he's used to attacking everyone, used to being successful in destroying whoever he attacks. But he was immediately repelled, and understanding that he was dealing with a power so far greater than his, he just simply surrendered, and his destruction was avoided in that way. So then he went away, so what's happened so far? That Banasura's armies have been destroyed, the Shivadrara weapon has been not destroyed, but he has been neutralized, so to speak, from no longer acting opposed to Krishna. And has Banasura learned his lesson yet? Because remember, he has all his arms, and he wants someone to fight with. That was the benediction that Lord Shiva gave him. So Banasura appeared, riding forward on his chariot to fight Lord Krishna. And he was angry, so angry. And when one's angry, which mode of nature is anger produced by?
Ignorance.
Yeah, so when one is in ignorance, I mean, it's hard enough to understand what's going on in the mode of passion. When one is in the mode of goodness, the result of goodness is Satvam Sandhaita Gyanam, Gyanam, knowledge. You see things in the right perspective. Passion, you're just in your, just in, always in desiring and lamentation. That's what goes on within the bubble of our consciousness continually. We never quite perceive what's going on, because we're always thinking about something we want, something that we don't want. So we're never quite there. So in ignorance, there's a focus. So it's such a relief to be in ignorance from the mode of passion, in the sense that there's a focus in passion. There's so many things going on. And it's confusing, but ignorance, there's no confusion. But you're completely wrong. You might even drive a car into anything. But and you're, while you're doing it, you're completely convinced this is exactly what you should be doing. And then later on, the ignorance is dispelled by reality, because ignorance is wrong. So like I may think that this wall is made out of atoms or something, and I could walk right through it. So I could just run as fast as I can. But ignorance may tell me something, but I'll just smash myself against the wall. So then I have to deal with, when ignorance fights reality, reality always wins. There's a saying like that. If when there's illusion fighting reality, reality wins. But only 100% of the time, don't worry. So 100% of the time, reality always wins. So he was in ignorance, and ignorance is a focusing of the consciousness. And you don't care. So in his ignorance, he was infuriated, and he shot many arrows at Lord Krishna. It was obvious that he couldn't defeat Krishna. He shot, the terribly infuriated demon shot many arrows at Lord Krishna, the carrier of the disc weapon. So he's called the carrier Chakra Yudhe, his weapon. He fights with the disc. So what's that a hint of? What's going to happen very soon? That he's going to find out what it's like to fight with Krishna, Sudarshan Chakra. As Bana continually hurling weapons at Krishna, the Supreme Lord began using his razor-sharp chakra to cut off Banasura's arms, as a thousand arms, as if they were tree branches. And Krishna's chakra was like a
chainsaw.
Like that. Cutting off his thousand arms. And Lord Shiva saw what was going on, and he felt compassionate for his devotee Manasura, whose arms were being cut off. And thus he approached Lord Chakrayudha, Krishna, and spoke to him as follows. So Manasura is still fighting, still angry, just like he was when Krishna's army started breaking down his city of Sunitapur. And when Krishna defeated him already, and let's see, his weapon even, and he's still angry, but now, because he's a devotee of Lord Shiva comes to his rescue. So in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 verses. He's going so much more than the Shivadwara. More than four times as many verses, or three times as many as the Shivadwara. He's going to pray to Lord Krishna to spare Banasura. And of course, Krishna is going to spare Banasura. Because Krishna is an ocean of mercy. So this is what he says. The sky is your navel, fire is your face, water your semen, heaven your head. The cardinal directions are your sense of hearing, herbal plants the hairs on your body, the water-bearing clouds the hair on your head. The earth is your foot, the moon your mind, and the sun your vision, while I am your ego. The ocean is your abdomen, Indra, your arms, Lord Brahma, your intelligence, the progenitor of mankind, your genitals, and religion, your heart. You are indeed the original Purusha, the creator of the worlds. And there's a comment, so he's explaining that the Lord, Krishna, and remember, Krishna's a person, that he's the universe. So in a different way that the Shiva Dwara described Krishna as the universe, is all in existence. So Lord Shiva is describing that Krishna is all in existence. It's so amazing that nothing in existence, that means everything, that we say nothing in existence is separate from Krishna, so that everything in existence is part of Krishna. So Srila Swami explains, and it's an interesting comment. Just as tiny bugs living inside a fruit cannot comprehend the fruit, so we tiny living beings cannot understand the Supreme Absolute Truth in whom we exist. So it's interesting because we never really think of ourselves as bugs, as insignificant little bugs. We think ourselves really as not, but because we're living in the bubble of our own illusory consciousness. Just imagine if you know, like if you see, you know, like a cartoon, a comic strip cartoon, they have those things coming out of, and when it what does it mean when it has the ones that are like clouds? What does that mean?
Thoughts.
Just imagine if we actually had those. And people could look at us. Yeah. That'd be quite amazing, wouldn't it? Where would we all hide? So, in the little bubbles of our thoughts, we don't quite think of ourselves as bugs in the fruit of Krishna, not being able to understand it. Rather, we think ourselves as great and powerful and wonderful, etc. It is difficult to understand the cosmic manifestation of the Lord, what to speak of His transcendental form as Sri Krishna. Therefore, we should surrender to Krishna consciousness, and the Lord Himself will help us understand. So first thing he's saying that everything is Krishna. Then your current descent, so he's also going to talk about, as the Shivadvara did, Krishna's descent and the purpose. Your current descent into the material realm, O Lord of unrestricted power, is meant for upholding the principles of justice and befitting and benefiting the entire universe. We demigods, each depending on your grace and authority, develop the seven planetary systems. You are the original person. You are one without a second, transcendental and self-manifesting. I mean, self-manifesting means, of course, that there's, you come from no one, everything comes from you. So that concept is impossible for the material consciousness, material finite intelligence to comprehend. You are the ultimate controller. You are nonetheless perceived in terms of the transformations of matter affected by your illusory energy. Transformations you sanction that the various, so that the various material qualities can fully manifest. So there's a long purport here that I don't think I'm going to read. The last two lines of this verse are of special philosophical significance. Why is the Lord perceived differently by different persons, although He is one? There's only one absolute reality, but everyone has a different perception of it. A partial explanation is given here. By the agency of Maya, the Lord's external potency, material nature is in a constant state of transformation, vikar. In one sense, then, material nature is unreal, asat. But because God is the supreme reality and because He is present within all things, and all things are His potency, material objects and energies possess a degree of reality. Therefore, some people see one aspect of material energy and think this is reality, while other people see a different aspect of material energy and think, no. That is reality. Being conditioned souls, we are covered by different configurations of material nature, and thus we describe the Supreme Truth or the Supreme Lord in terms of our corrupted vision. Yet even the covering qualities of material forms, such nature, such as our conditioned intelligence, mind, and senses, are real because they are the potency of the Lord, and therefore through all things we can perceive in a more or less subjective way the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Shiva continues, O Almighty One, just as the sun, though hidden by a cloud, illuminates the cloud and all other visible forms as well, so you, although hidden by the material qualities, remain self-luminous and thus reveal all those qualities along with the living entities who possess them, because your consciousness allows others to perceive, and your consciousness is self-luminous. You are the reality of existence that makes all things visible. So we perceive partially reality and we think it is all of reality. Or Krishna is the essence of, and within everyone's partial sense of reality. We're perceiving some of him shining through. Their intelligence is bewildered by your maya, fully attached to children, wife, home, and so on. Persons immersed in the ocean of material misery sometimes rise to the surface and sometimes sink down. So first, Jiva Goswami says, after Lord Shiva has glorified the Lord, now he's going to return to his position. Lord Shiva is going to speak about what he wants actually to save Banasura by first describing Banasura's position. One who has attained this human form of life as a gift from God, yet who fails to control his senses and honor your feet, is surely to be pitied, for he is only cheating himself. That mortal who rejects you, his true self, his dearmost friend and Lord, for the sake of sense objects, whose nature is just the opposite, refuses nectar and instead consumes poison. I, Lord Brahma, and the other demigods and the pure-minded sages have all surrendered wholeheartedly unto you, our dearmost self and Lord. Let us worship you, the Supreme Lord, to be freed from material life. You are the maintainer of the universe. You are the cause of its creation and destruction. You are equipoised and perfectly at peace. So he's actually taking the Shivadwara's prayers and expanding them. Or rather, maybe the Shivadwara has taken his master's prayers and compressed them. Equipoised and perfectly at peace, you are the true friend. You are the self. You are the worship of Lord. You are one without a second. You are the shelter of the worlds and of all souls. Thus, this Banasura is my dear and faithful follower, and I have awarded him freedom from fear. Therefore, my Lord, please grant him your mercy, just as you showed mercy to Prahlad, the Lord of the demons. So that was his prayers. Purport. Lord Shiva feels inclined to help Banasura because the demons showed great devotion to Lord Shiva when he provided musical accompaniment for Lord Shiva's Tandava dance. Another reason Bana is an object of Lord Shiva's favor is that he is a descendant of the great devotees Prahlad and Bali. And how does the Supreme Lord, he's ready to kill him, and he's killed all his armies already, and how does he respond to Lord Shiva's request? He says, my dear Lord, for your pleasure, we must certainly do what you have requested of us. I fully agree with your conclusion. I will not kill this demonic son of Arochani, for I gave Prahlad Maharaj the benediction that I would not kill any of his descendants. So Krishna is so kind to Bhakta Janapriya. He is not only kind to his devotees, he asvatantra, Iva Nipa, he is not only dear to his devotees and completely dependent on them, he's also completely attached to those who are devotees of his devotees. It was to subdue Banasura, so he wasn't going to kill him because he was a descendant of Prahlad and Bali Maharaj. And he had promised Prahlad that he would not kill any of his descendants, even if they were demons. And because Lord Shiva, a devotee, had interceded on his part, so I found this very interesting, because Banasura had corrupted two great devotees, Vidvid and Momasura, and turned them from devotees into demons by his association. And Balaram kills Vidvid, and Krishna has already killed Momasura, but he's not going to kill Banasura because he has a connection with his devotees, and his devotees are Lord Shiva speaking on his behalf. It was to subdue Banasura's false pride that I severed his arms, and I slew his mighty army because it had become a burden on the earth. This demon, who still has four arms, will be immune to old age. So not only is he going to spare him, he's going to benedict him. So Krishna is merciful. But how he distributes his mercy is very difficult to understand. We can understand that it's following a devotee's mercy here, because Lord Shiva is requesting him. So someone could say, well, let me finish what he says here. He says, he'll be immune to old age and death, and he will serve as one of your principal attendants. He will have nothing to fear on any account. Thus attaining freedom from fear, Banasura offered obeisances to Lord Krishna by touching his head to the ground. Bana then seated Aniruddha and his bride on their chariot and brought them before the Lord. So therefore the cause of the whole problem was solved. At the front of the party, Lord Krishna then placed Aniruddha and his bride, both beautifully adorned with fine clothes and ornaments, and surrounded them with a full military division. Thus Lord Krishna took his leave of Lord Shiva and departed. The Lord then entered his capital. The city was lavishly decorated with flags and victory arches, and its avenues and crossways were all sprinkled with water. As conch shells, anakas, and dandavi drums resounded, I mean timpani drums and kettle drums, the Lord's relatives, the brahmanas, and the general populace all came forward to greet him respectfully. So as soon as he finished his business, he went back home. The business was to recover Aniruddha. Whoever rises early in the morning and remembers Lord Krishna's victory in his battle with Lord Shiva will never experience defeat. Thus end the purport of the humble servants of his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 63rd chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Krishna Fights with Banasura. So, anyway, I find that so amazing how he benedicted Banasura, gave him so much mercy because of his relationship with his two devotees, Lord Shiva and Prahlad, and Bali Maharaj, the devotees.
How did he wear his thousand arms?
How did he wear? You mean when it was cold? How many gloves did he need? What do you mean?
Where were they all?
I mean, when it was cold, did he put them in his pockets? You mean, what did he do with them? Or did they fit him on his shoulders? How did they fit him on
his shoulders?
Huh?
It's a lot of arms.
Well,
500 on each side. Even 5 on each side is a lot.
Ravana has 20 heads. How many necks?
Well, Brahmins took more than 10 million heads.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I remember Sataputra saying that there are multi-dimensions. So, Perhaps that's the way. Just imagine if he,
they've been wagging around, you know.
But along with having them, just like a centipede has 100 arms and 100 feet, and somehow he's got them coordinated.
They all have to march.
And or say he was shooting 500 bows with so many arrows all at the same time, so he was able to coordinate them too, because he didn't think, now which arm should I use, and this one, okay, now I have to pick up this one on this one. Now it's so hard to figure out, you know.
I
got
the
two
kind of questions that bugs and apples ask.
Exactly. Good point. Well, how is Krishna conscious of everything in existence? I mean, that's also pretty hard to figure out. So he has a different kind of consciousness, Banasura, than we do, and a different kind of body to match his consciousness. So we in our bug body, as you're saying, cannot
understand.
We can't imagine, just like, yeah, we can't imagine so many things.
You said that reality always wins. But we sort of see around us a lot of illusion that seems to be winning.
Illusion replaced with another illusion.
Yeah. See, even Bhakti says that illusions never win. Because what's the in other words, you're gonna, everyone's an illusion. Huh?
I mean, it's like one illusion goes and then maybe it doesn't win.
No. But when but in time, just like it's like someone who's on the top of a very tall building. What's the bell tower in Perth? Something exciting like that. And he decides he's going to fly. So he jumps off the bell tower, and for a few moments, he's jumping upwards, and he's thinking, I'm flying. But that's just his illusion. So time tells. Everyone else looking at him understands that he's falling. But he's thinking he's flying. But time tells always. So the people who, what is their illusion?
That they can be happy here, that they can...
They don't think that, you know, that's part of their illusion, but they're completely in the bubble of their consciousness, and there's all kinds of things going on in there that have nothing to do with reality. So they're living in an illusory world, and in the illusory world they're the king or the queen, and they're in control, and anyone who disagrees with them deserves to have their heads cut off. Off with his head, off with her head. And then, and we alternatively in this illusory world think ourselves the greatest gift to the universe, and then the most lowly list of creatures. And we just go through all these different illusory states of consciousness all day long.
So doesn't that mean that illusion is winning time and time again?
But then what happens when you hit the wall?
Then you're lost.
Well, then the illusion cracks.
All the time that the illusion was dominant.
But it's not winning. It's just illusion. You're being controlled and you're falling. And you're imagining that you're flying.
So, coming to this whole illusion, bubble of illusion, unless you completely surrender to Krishna, that illusion will be not gone.
Forever.
Forever it will be like that. So this illusion, after illusion, it seems, appears to be winning, but it's not. That's Krishna's arrangement like that. You go away and again, unless you realize the real effective shelter.
And
then the reality.
And even the illusion is a gift of Krishna. That's what's being said too. Because what does Maya specifically do? It causes us to see things as separate from Krishna. But the absolute truth means that nothing is in fact separate from Krishna. So that's the illusion, that we're separate from Krishna, that we can be independent, we can be the enjoyers, that we're healthy, that we're this, that we're that, that we're... But it's all little bugs. Bugs and little fruity bugs.
Is it not nutty bugs?
No, some of us are quite nutty bugs, but nevertheless bugs.
Bugs, prayers that Lord Shiva offered, we can understand he fully realizes Krishna's position. But just previous to that, he sent his own weapon to fight Krishna.
Yeah.
So is that illusion as well, or I mean, Shiva's illusion?
Well, there's some. I think we had spoken of this before, that the acharyas, some of them say that he did this to make the point to Banasura, that even that he's taken shelter of him, the Banasura's taken shelter of him, but he's the supreme, that Krishna is actually the supreme. So sometimes lessons are best given indirectly by example, which because they speak louder than words. Because and also earlier, Lord Shiva told Banasura that you will be the you'll find someone, you'll meet your match, and your flag will be knocked off, your child will be defeated. And Banasura was so thrilled because he thought, no one can defeat me. So even sometimes we speak something to someone even though it's true, because of the nature of their particular bubble, and it conflicts with their concept of reality, so they can't see it's true. Somewhere recently I read an article where someone had met one devotee in Vrindavan. His nephew came and saw him there, who wasn't a devotee, but and he had never contacted him. He met him once in his life when he was young or something like that. And he was a journalist and a very, very good writer. But they couldn't form a relationship. But one of the things he said in the article is that he was quoting Prabhupada, saying that you can't be happy in this world, that there's no happiness in this world. And just such a statement like that, that's so obvious to all the devotees, it was too shocking for him, and he couldn't accept it. So, but after you go through life and you watch what happens to you and your family members and the society and to your own body, then you reach the conclusion, when you're an old man maybe, that yes, there's no happiness in this world, that everything is just zeros. But other than the mercy of Gauranga, Dutipada, the lotus feet of Gauranga. So sometimes it's better to give an example, let people find out. But it also says that Lord Shiva was put into illusion by the Leela Shakti. Was that there too?
No.
Huh?
No. I haven't heard that.
There's something.
The thing is that he promised to protect him, so he's doing his job to the best of his capacity.
But that's one thing. But that's not the only one in it. The
lesson Banasura can learn is that he's taking shelter of Shiva, and then he can see that Shiva can't defeat Krishna.
That's what the Shiva
so
Lord is.
So it's a question of Banasura being able to defeat.
Yeah, right. Ruja fought on behalf of Banasura just to show Banasura his faults by making him experience suffering. Shiva is addressed as Bhagavan to indicate that by nature he's all-knowing, that's well aware of Krishna's greatness. Still, although Shiva knew he would defeat him, He joined the battle against him to demonstrate the glories of Krishna. This is the opinion of ancient authorities. But also in another place, it is said that he got fired up to fight, and he wanted to win. If I remember correctly, he was by Krishna's grace. Otherwise, it couldn't happen really. Because Lord Krishna likes to fight. So many pastimes go on like this.
Yeah, it's such a chivalrous spirit. Even between friends, they develop that mood.
That comment was Vishnu, I talk about this. He was very determined, this Banasura, because he was defeated at every moment. And still.
But that's kind of, in a sense, what he was waiting for, right? Somebody who was so expert and excellent that he could use all of his skills and everything to its fullest extent to defeat him. So
and
the more that he was getting challenged, the more excited he would be.
That's the
illusion. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that Yoga Maya, Lord Krishna's internal potency, bewildered Lord Shiva just as she had bewildered Brahma. In support of this statement, the Acharya cites the phrase Brahma Rudradi Mohanam from Bhakti Samhita Sindhu. Of course, Yoga Maya's job is to make fine arrangements for the Lord's pastimes, and thus Shiva became enthusiastic to battle the Supreme Lord Krishna. So there's a few different types of explanations. So one was he was purposeful, and the other was he was to facilitate the pastime that was going on. Oh, it's late. And tomorrow, oh, this is all family business we've been dealing with. Like tomorrow also family business continues, but there's an incredible lesson in tomorrow's family business.